You're listening to Queers, a podcast about politics and culture with Simon Copland and Benjamin Riley.
Sorry, I just got distracted for a second. Sorry, can you just say that again?
Where should I go from? Because I feel like I said quite a lot.
Yeah, sorry. Just do the last bit.
Oh, yeah, no, I was just saying...
It's the 21st of July, 2017. I'm Simon Copland.
And I'm Benjamin Riley.
Welcome to Queers. Each episode, we talk our way through questions on a theme, and this week is the second part of a two-part episode talking about queer essentialism and what it means to identify as queer.
But before we jump into the conversation, we just wanted to remind you about our fancy new social media accounts that we probably should have set up like when we started the podcast. But now we have them, and so you should like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and talk about the episodes. On both platforms, it is at Queers Podcast. So easy to remember.
In last week's episode, we spoke about the controversy of a Vogue magazine cover featuring Gigi Hadid and Zayn Malik. The cover claimed the couple were part of a new generation embracing gender fluidity. We suggest you may want to listen to that episode before you listen to this one, but it is not essential. No pun intended there, or I think pun definitely intended.
So in that episode and in that discussion, we spoke in particular about essentialist ideas of gender and sexuality, which kind of led us to a place at the end of the discussion, conveniently, which leads us right into this episode and this discussion, which is who gets to identify as queer.
This specific question became relevant recently after actor Andrew Garfield told audiences that his life is currently so gay that he considers himself a gay man right now, just without the physical act. Many mocked Garfield for his statement, stating that you can't just decide to be gay because you have lots of gay friends and like RuPaul's Drag Race.
But is this actually the case? With so much of queer politics now being focused on identity, can't someone just decide to be queer without the so-called physical act? If that's the case, what does it actually mean to be queer?
So Ben, let's get this going. What did you make of Garfield's comments? Does he get to decide to be gay the way he said he was?
Before I answer that question, I want to put it back on you, unfairly. Just because I feel like where we ended our last episode and the last discussion in a place that I think could provide a nice little kind of jumping off point to respond to this question. Because really, like, you know, I guess my very short answer to that question is I have no idea, but I think it's a really interesting question. And I'll kind of get more into that. But you had been talking about in our last conversation. We were talking about the connection between sort of identity politics and essentialism and this this thought that perhaps essentialism is a kind of core part of identity politics and maybe even the core idea of it. And you suggested that you saw a kind of interesting contradiction there. Do you want to expand on that a bit first, or kind of maybe give us a little bit of background as to what you meant?
Yeah, so I think the contradiction that I see is... So identity, a lot of identity politics is based on the idea of being able to identify however you want and sort of as who you are and sort of being able to sort of place that identity onto yourself and then for people that there's no real right to question that identity and that's a sort of self-prerogative to be able to do it, to define yourself and to be able to express yourself in the way that you want to define yourself and to be able to have the right to do that. And that's sort of one side of it, but the other side of it, you have a very essentialized element of this, which sort of says that identities are fixed and that there is a certain number of identities and that these identities are ones that are sort of defined at birth almost. So, you know, you're born gay, you're born straight, you're born bisexual, you're born, you know, there's an essentialized element to gender, there's an essentialized element to sexuality. So there's this sort of contradiction that I see in which you, you're able to define yourself, but that definition is one that's been placed onto you as part of your sort of inherent core to your being that's sort of often framed in a biological way. So it's not really a self-definition, it's sort of you almost expressing something that is true, that is a true part of yourself that is sort of inherently there somehow.
Yeah, totally. It's almost like identifying becomes this act of like, unveiling or uncovering, you know, it's like sort of like coming out as a metaphor for all of identity politics or something, you know, that,
absolutely,
that it's this,
yeah,
that is super interesting, that it's like you can identify as whatever you want, but only if in the act of doing so you are revealing an inherent truth.
Yeah, which exactly.
Is kind of so weird. It's such a kind of odd, it's such an odd idea. So I guess I was keen to have that. I feel like that's just, I don't know if that's going to lead directly into what I have to say about Andrew Garfield, but I feel like that's a really kind of interesting thing to have just as the backdrop of this whole conversation, because that to me is a completely fascinating idea.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Well, that would, I mean, I'm glad.
So thank you. I didn't warn you at all that I was going to do that. So
that's fine. But now I want to hear what. I want to go back because I was the one who asked the first question.
That's true. That's true.
That was... So what did you make of Garfield's comments?
Oh, I mean, like a lot of this kind of thing, on a superficial level, I don't really care. Like, on a superficial level, I'm just like, whatever. I don't know. He can do what he wants. It's probably not important, like, whether he's a gay man or not. If he wants to feel like that, you know, whatever. He can do that. But I think it's interesting on a few levels. I think it's sort of, to link it to the conversation we were having in the last episode, we were talking a bit about distinctions between discourses of essentialism around sexuality versus gender. And I think I'd said something briefly about how the idea that the kind of, you know, quote, proof for sexuality is very specific, which is exactly the thing that Andrew Garfield is saying that he is not doing, which is he's not having sex with men, or he's not sexually attracted to men, I guess is probably a better way of putting it. But obviously, sexuality is more, or sexual identity, say, is more complicated than that, in that, you know, gay is coded as things beyond the sexual act. You know, there is a certain kind of cultural script for gay men that looks like a certain thing, usually. And that, I feel like so much of respectability politics and the politics of gayness in recent years has become about denying that that's true. And I think, obviously, there's a lot of value in broadening out the possibilities of what it is to be a gay man. But the fact remains that there is still that sort of, like, it is still more than who you're sexually attracted to. And so I think there's kind of Andrew Garfield's comments sort of highlight that to some degree. And that's, you know, sort of an interesting thing to talk about. Although, you know, maybe there's not really much more to say about it than that. Whether or not he's allowed to identify as gay... I mean, part of me is tempted to just be like a total asshole about it and just say, sure, I mean, like, let's just say anyone can, like, what do I care? But, oh God, this is such a trick. This is really hard.
It is really hard.
It is hard.
Because it comes down to like a whole bunch of questions about what does being gay even mean? Who gets to define who is gay and who isn't gay? It gets down to questions about who, in turn, you know, can you, and I think goes down to another issue we brought up in the last episode about those straight men who have sex
totally.
With men.
Totally, it's the perfect kind of inverse of that.
Who gets to define not to be gay.
Yeah, it's the perfect
inverse of that. You know, I've made the comment previously, not in the podcast, but probably on my Facebook page, that if we're going to frame so much of sort of sexuality and gender discourse around the idea of identity, then surely in this instance, the identity, you know, if someone identifies in that way, sort of joins in that group, then isn't this kind of the natural outcome of this kind of stuff? So there's a whole range of different elements in here that sort of make it a really fascinating topic, even if it sort of came off at this sort of superficial level of this guy making this sort of silly comments, you know,
and
this actor
like,
making
it's
these
so
comments.
It's so difficult to tackle because it just kind of immediately highlights so many contradictions about how we define gender and sexuality. Because, like, you know, you talking about that example of, you know, there's been a bunch of, God, I hate when these sorts of things become sort of in vogue to report on. But a bunch of stories recently about the idea of straight men having sex with men and not identifying as gay and what does that mean and blah, 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 blah. And I feel sort of pretty comfortable in saying that if they don't want to say that they're gay, then they're not gay and who cares?
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean,
But if we're comfortable doing that, then can
totally,
we
like, the reverse of that is just to kind of say, well, Andrew Garfield should be able to say that he's gay. Which is so silly. Like, I don't know what to do with that.
No, I don't know either. I don't know. It's maybe how are we going to tackle this, Ben? In the next 20 minutes or so that we're going to be doing this episode.
Well, I feel like there's two ways that you can approach this. There's the kind of like theoretical way, which is probably the harder way, and I'm hoping that we'll come to some sort of conclusions there. But there's a sort of practical question here as well, and it's something that we talked a bit about in the last episode around the kind of appropriation of oppression. I think is what often causes backlash around these sorts of stories. And mm-hmm. because because this is going to be the second time this episode I'm saying that I'm a bit of an asshole, but because I'm a bit of an asshole about this kind of thing, I kind of look at, like, you know, I suppose I don't see gay man, quote, as a particularly, oh god, no, this is such a privileged thing to say, as a protected category in the context in which I live, at least. But obviously there are lots of parts of the world where that's not the case, and gay men still face significant persecution. So I guess when I look at Andrew Gufford's comments within the context in which he lives, the stakes just feel so low. You know, like nothing is really lost to me by him saying that he feels like a gay man, even though he doesn't want to have sex with men. Whereas, like, I might feel differently if he was doing that in, like, I don't know, in a country where gay men was sort of like being killed en masse, or even if he was, say, doing the same thing around, I don't know, like a trans identity or something like that, where the persecution is much more sort of active. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, this is more to sort of explain response to it.
I understand the emotional response, and I think we spoke about that emotional response with the Gigi Hadid and Zayn Malik controversy.
Yeah, yeah.
In particular, in relation to the sort of the feeling of the appropriation of that oppression, and the idea of these people sort of having this position to be able to sort of act in this, you know, to say, look, at, you know, in that case, that we're gender fluid, or even though they didn't actually actively say that, but to sort of be purported as being gender fluid when, you know, they had the sort of privilege to be able to do that without facing real discrimination for it, which is not true of the vast majority of people who are gender fluid or trans in our community. So I totally understand that emotional reaction to it. It sort of feels like these people are getting to sort of live off the oppression of others in many ways.
Have their cake and eat it too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. At the same time, part of me is also like, well, actually, you know, I totally get that. Part of me also goes, however, maybe even if we've got that emotional response, does a situation where people wanting to be part of a queer community or a queer identity or queer culture or whatever you want to call it, is that a positive thing, no matter, you know, however it works? And so, you know, does that sort of coverage and exposure, is that just helping people who are in those sorts of who are continuing to face discrimination, does it help them? I don't know. I guess it's difficult in that sense. You know, does Vogue talking about gender fluidity in their magazine, even if it's with people who probably don't identify as gender fluid, does it help people who are gender fluid?
The way into this, or at least the kind of... on this angle. And it totally just, like, as you were talking, I was thinking about the discussion we had a couple of episodes ago about allies, because I feel like this is really linked. And it kind of points to something that is really useful about identity politics, at least on some level, which is the fact that we can... And I was thinking about it in terms of, like, political movements based on kind of rights-type stuff, that it's a useful kind of organizing principle for getting things that are for specific groups of people. And it's also... becomes a way to sort of define particular kinds of communities and particular kinds of, you know, safe spaces and that sort of thing. And the ability, when we were having that conversation about allies, the ability to exclude people from those spaces, I think I sort of said, I feel like we had a bit of a difference of opinion there, but I suppose I sort of settled on the idea that it is useful to be able to exclude people from those spaces sometimes, if not a lot of the time, for reasons like being able to have more complex conversations without having to kind of educate people constantly or bring people along constantly, or just being able to sort of, like, I don't know, exist within a culture that looks like a particular thing. you know, and culture is something that I think is important, and contribution is something that I think is important, not at the cost of anything else, but those things sort of rely on in-group, out-group stuff. They rely on being able to define who is or isn't in those spaces. So I feel like an argument against, and this is me just like thinking off the top of my head a little bit, but an argument perhaps against Andrew Garfield being able to identify as gay, and perhaps like anyone just being able to identify as whatever they want, is that it becomes very difficult to maintain those sorts of spaces and have those sorts of political movements if anyone can be in them just because they say that they're in them, without necessarily having the experiences that would inform their ability to participate in a particular culture, for example, subculture.
Yeah, I can totally see what you're saying. So I can hear what you're saying. I guess the question that then arises is, how do we test that in those sorts of spaces?
Yeah,
how do we engage in this sort of stuff to say, okay, well, how do you prove that you're a bona fide queer?
Totally. Well, and in some ways, this is where the Andrew Garfield example is not a good example, because it's so, it feels so kind of ludicrous on some level.
Yeah, it does.
I'm trying to think of a more kind of borderline case where, because I feel like often this stuff is just kind of self-selected, you know, which is exactly what's happened in the case of Andrew Garfield. But
the nature of queer politics for so long is that people who weren't queer didn't want to identify as queer.
In the
sense that, you know, identifying as gay or lesbian or trans, I think maybe it's particularly true. I mean,
oppression has cachet now.
It had a whole bunch of oppression associated with it. But I mean, I think there's an oppression has cachet now is a good point. But also, I think, you know, it is definitely easier to live in this world as queer than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. So there's the, you know, the possibilities to be part of that community without that oppression that makes it a bit more appealing, I guess.
Sure.
Safer,
comes back to that kind of have your cake and eat it too thing. Like, you can get the sort of the cachet of, you know, identifying as part of a marginalized group without necessarily having to face the same oppression.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's the good way to put it. But now I've lost my train of thought of where we were up to.
Well, we were talking about like proof. Like, how do you, like, what?
So I guess what I was trying to get there is that, you know, previously this wouldn't have been an issue, because I don't think you would have had people who would have not actually been queer, or would have not seen themselves as queer, who would have been trying to enter the group, enter the queer group, you know, enter the community, because it would have, you know, it wouldn't have been something people would have done. But I think they've actually got potentially more, it's more likely now that this kind of stuff might occur, because, you know, you've got this sort of cachet of being part of a marginalized group without the sort of risks that come with that. And so this is something that's potentially more likely to occur, because I think more people might want to be queer, because, you know, in some circles, being queer is considered to be cool, and sort of something that you want to be part of. And I guess the question is that a bad thing? Don't we want more people to be queer? Isn't that kind of a good thing? I'm kind of up for more queers.
Well, I feel like there's a question here about, you know, we talk about community a lot, and a real kind of bugbear of mine is the distinction between community and demographic. So when Andrew Garfield says, "I am a gay man," to me, it's not that he's saying, we sort of use the term gay community very freely, too freely, I think, and it's not necessarily that he's saying that he somehow identifies now, belongs now to some big, nebulous, all-encompassing gay community. He's marking himself as part of a demographic. And the reason I think that's a meaningful distinction to make is that if you talk about, like, proof, if you talk about who decides who gets to be inside or outside of these spaces, the nature of community is that you can't just say that you're in a community to be in a community. Like, that's not how community works, at least not as far as I would define it. To me, a community is a space where there are meaningful connections between the people within that community, and most of the people within that community even. So, like, I would never say, for example, that an overarching gay community exists. I think that there are gay communities that exist around particular spaces, maybe online or geographical spaces or with particular interests or even like friend groups or that sort of thing. But it's sort of
yep.
the existence of those communities relies on a kind of interconnected web of like, well, connection, of intimacy within those spaces. And so to go back to the question of Andrew Garfield, if he were to just out of the blue, I mean, it's a bit kind of, let's just pretend that he's not famous for a second, because otherwise this example doesn't work. If he were to like rock up at a gay bar in Sydney, say, and were to just kind of stand there and go, I'm a part of this community. Well, he's not a part of that community because no one's going to have any idea who he is. And that, you know, so he's kind of like, would then have to go through a process of people sort of, you know, checking whether he belongs there. And then that community itself gets to decide whether or not he is a part of that. But in Andrew Garfield saying, I am gay, he was explicitly doing that within the context of his friends and within his friend groups. So you can kind of make, I feel like I'm just like kind of turning in circles here, but you can perhaps make the argument that he is identifying as part of a gay community that from all appearances he does belong to, which is this community of his kind of friends and acquaintances, most of whom apparently are gay men, according to this news story. So, I mean, this goes back to the problem
and he's clearly been accepted into that group.
Exactly, exactly.
Part of that culture and however they engage collectively, he's sort of been accepted as part of that
community.
That community.
So I'm going to kind of weasel out of the question a bit here and basically say, can he identify as gay? Well, that to me just raises more questions about the sort of weirdness of what it means to actually identify as anything at all. Can he be part of a gay community? He clearly already is.
Hmm. I think it's an interesting distinction to draw, because I think it's actually an important one to draw, because you can be gay and not be part of a gay community. And I think it's very easy to not be gay and be part of a gay community. And I think that those two things happen quite regularly.
And I know many, many gay men who don't belong to anything that looks like a gay community.
Yeah, and I've been in gay spaces where there are people who aren't gay, who are there but are clearly part of that community.
Yes,
And clearly accepted as part of that community, and brought in and sort of engage in the cultural practices of that community very strongly. And I've got no problem with that at all. I think that's great. So those two things definitely happen very clearly. It's just whether you could then cross that line and say, well, I'm part of the gay community, so now I can identify as gay. And is that a thing that can happen? I mean, I still don't know, in all honesty. We're trying to answer this question, but I'm not sure.
I feel like that question
sure.
can only really be answered within, if it is assessed against the usefulness or otherwise of identifying as gay. So it's kind of a bigger question about identity politics, that it's sort of like where, you know, if we say, and I would certainly argue, and I imagine you might agree with me, that the whole idea of identifying as a thing is only meaningful in the act of doing so. You know, it doesn't necessarily reflect a reality of any kind. It is the kind of the act of identification that's the important bit. Then, like, whether or not we grant, it's funny to just be having this conversation entirely about Andrew Garfield, but it is a useful example. Whether or not we grant Andrew Garfield the status of gay man, I feel like we can only kind of go, is it useful or otherwise to do so?
Hmm. Yeah, okay.
Because it's not, because outside of that context, it's not really a meaningful question.
Hmm, yeah, okay, you know, I see what you're saying. And so is it useful to identify him as, to allow him, or is it useful to allow him to identify as gay?
I guess so. I mean, and what does that even mean? I mean, like, us as the kind of, like, the entirety of gay men.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've got the list, and we're gonna tick you off and say, well, you can identify as gay, and you can't. And
yep,
Well, you know, is it useful? I don't know. I guess I'm trying to think about this. I'm trying to think about this as a framework of a question. I think there's potential value. I mean, I think that, you know, I've always thought that the potential value of blurring boundaries between gay and straight are quite useful in terms of blurring blurring the very nature of those two terms in the first place. Because I think that those two terms are, and we discussed this in the last episode, I think those two terms are sort of quite, sort of have through a process of essentialization, have become quite stratified and have become sort of one group over here and one group over there.
Yes.
And the way to blur those boundaries, I think, is actually quite a useful way in sort of breaking down some of that. And I think it creates space for people to do a couple of things. Firstly, to feel comfortable engaging in cultural practices that aren't part of their so-called sexuality. So, you know, to be a person who doesn't have sex with men, but who is comfortable engaging in queer cultural practices, which I think can be a whole range of different things, whether it's, you know, hanging out with gay men, or, you know, this is in the Andrew Garfield context, but it would be different for different people, you know, hanging out with queer men, enjoying drag, you know, participating in those sorts of queer cultural practices, I think are a good thing, you know, to be able to blur those boundaries. And it can be a whole range of different cultural boundaries that we could be blurring that I think are important. But it also could open up space to allow people to sort of explore the physical aspects of their sexuality, and to not have to, I think so much of the essentialized discourse assumes, and again, we discussed this in the last episode, so much of the essentialist discourse assumes that if you sort of cross one of those boundaries, then you change your identity. So we talked about the straight men who have sex with men, and, you know, the sort of demands that these men must be gay or bisexual or whatever. You know, it says that if you want to engage in this practice, you have to change your identity, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes with that, a whole bunch of, like, demands that come with that. Whereas I'm much more keen on the idea that, you know, explore your physical sexuality however you want to explore it, and be able to identify however you want to identify, because that doesn't hurt anybody, and so just engage with it how you want to engage with it. And if this is what he's doing, is allowing, you know, creating a bit more space for people to be able to do that, then I'm happy for him to be doing that.
I'm just like imagining, like, in our, you know, we talked a bit in the last episode about our we can be accused of kind of utopianism sometimes, or operating in this kind of overly theoretical space. But I'm just imagining, like, in our queer utopia, where people can just do whatever they want, I'm imagining, like, that the ideal, like, outcome here would be that Andrew Garfield, like, belongs to these communities of gay men. He's, like, hanging out with his gay friends, like, going to, like, watching Drag Race or whatever. And then, like, one day that just, like, somehow turns into, like, this kind of semi-sexual thing. And he's, like, explore, and that, like, that sort of cultural identification becomes this kind of gateway into, like, him exploring his sexuality, but not then necessarily needing to identify as gay or bi. And that, in a utopia, Andrew Garfield is actually maybe this kind of wonderful example of how identifying as a thing can lead to opening up all the possibilities of your, not only your, how you identify, but your sexual practices as well. I'm being a bit silly here, but, like,
you've just described, like, a really sort of postmodern porn.
No, totally. Sort of, you know. As I was saying, I'm like, I think I want to watch this.
I can totally see it. I'm sure, you know, it's the kind of sort of, you know, the porn based in theory. Sort of based in gender theory, gender and sexuality theory.
That's what we should do, Simon. We should open up a porn studio to just, like, have, like, porn versions of our podcast episodes. what everyone wants to see.
Oh, you never know.
I'm not saying we perform it, but, you know. We script it.
We script it and hire out people to perform. I'm sure it would be popular, to be fair.
That's if this podcasting thing doesn't work out, that's what we'll do.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to it. Well, where does that lead us?
Sorry, that's a weird little rabbit hole. But I guess...
I guess
it just kind of brings me back to that central point of, like, what to me is the sort of, like, not meaninglessness, but, like, abstractness of the idea of identifying as a thing. And so I feel like I can only engage with this in those sorts of ways, in terms of, like, looking at outcomes, whether they be practical or emotional or political or sexual or what.
Hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. And I think, actually, going back to your little utopia, because I think it is actually, even though it was a little weird rabbit hole that we went down for a second there, I think it is an interesting one, because I think in some ways it defies a lot of the essentialist narrative that we've been discussing in these last couple of episodes, And it's useful to think about it in that kind of way, in that it's the kind of utopia which allows people to explore things without having to necessarily change who they are, or to identify as something, and then to allow that to explore themselves physically in different ways, or to allow them to explore themselves physically and to change, and that to affect their way that they think about themselves, about their identities, and that kind of stuff. It's that sort of blending of those sorts of blending, I don't know if that's the right word, but this sort of utopian ideal of the potentials of having the potentials of being able to just explore without having to always sort of make that,
well, without having to identify.
I think there's a lot of assumption that if you're a straight person who has sex with a man, a straight guy who has sex with a man, then it sort of creates this existential crisis that makes you really question everything about yourself at this point of time. And in my utopian ideal, that's not something that would occur. It's that, you know, that you could be able to have sex with a man, you could enjoy it, and you could want to do it more, and that would be great. Or you could not enjoy it, and that's fine as well, but it doesn't create this huge existential crisis, but, you know, this huge identity crisis. And so to be able to do that, I think, is this sort of utopian ideal. And it's interesting, sort of Garfield sort of takes us in this sort of opposite direction, where he's like, well, I just want to identify in this kind of way rather than necessarily thinking about it, doing the physical act first. But, you know, I think it's a sort of inverse of the problem that you see so often in much of popular media. But I still think it's an interesting part of that sort of utopian ideal, where you could just be like, well, you can just identify how you want as well, and that's totally cool. It's different kinds of ways.
Well, I think that kind of core idea of being able to do what you want without having to identify is almost like if I think about my politics and kind of what I'm interested in and what I believe in and what I think we should be kind of fighting for, if you go past the sort of like the material stuff, the like violence and economic oppression and all of that stuff that I think is really important to engage with, when you actually get to sort of questions about, I don't know, an individual or a community's ability to, I don't know, be who they want to be, essentially, or live in the ways that they want to live, I feel like that's a good kind of summation of a goal for me, you know, is to sort of work to enable that sort of behavior, work to enable spaces and the safety to be able to, I don't know, explore things around your gender and your sexuality without that needing to be attached to essential ideas of identity.
I think that's a great goal to have. I think it's kind of funny that we don't have that goal. Like, that we just sort of, the idea that, you know, maybe I'm too idealistic about thinking back to like early gay liberation. But I think that was part of a lot of initial goals from early gay lib groups, was this sort of idea of this sort of sexual freedom where you could sort of explore these ideas and explore your sexuality in different kind of ways and enjoy that, and to sort of have sort of, there's a sort of a creativity about it almost, this sort of like creative exploration that I think...
Sure, it's like play, you know?
Yeah, play. Yeah, but I think it's so often missing in our discourse today. It's just not there. It's this kind of like, your sexuality is your thing and it's kind of put upon you and you don't get to explore it. It's just there. It's been there from, you know, from the start of your being. And you just have to sort of deal with it almost. And like the problem for gay people is they just got stuck with the crappy sexuality, you know, and that's kind of how much, so much of the discourse is. And, you know, and I hate that, because I think there is so much greatness about queer sexualities and queer culture and sort of that sort of exploration. And I think it sort of bringing in that sort of discourse about the capacity to have that play and that to have that enjoyment and to have that, all of that kind of stuff, I think is really, really important. And I think it's kind of sad that it's been lost. And I think so much of it has been lost because of essentialized discourses.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Maybe that's a good place to wrap up.
Yeah, I think so too. It's been a really good couple of discussions, I think. And I hope all of you, our lovely listeners, have really enjoyed it. And thank you for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. It'll be a bit longer because I'm going on holidays. Yay! I'm going to the US and Canada for 3 weeks. And I suspect, and I was going to say, and as I suspect that I might be a bit jet-lagged by the time I get back, so there might be a little delay in me getting back into it. But yeah, I probably am currently on holidays when you are listening to this episode. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll try and keep a tabs on what our responses are as they come through.
Yeah, great. I mean, and as we talked about at the start of the last episode as well, we. Using this hopefully as an opportunity to play with the format a bit and do some of the interviews that we've been talking about for a long time. So stay tuned for that. There'll be a bit of, the schedule might be a bit strange over the next few weeks, but just bear with us. In the meantime, you can, as always, download our episodes and listen to our episodes at queers.podomatic.com or subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you do that, please leave us a review and rating, which will help other people find us.
And an even better way to help other people find us is to tell your friends and family and colleagues and everybody who you think is amazing, or even people who you don't think are amazing, about us.
Well, even take the bad listeners.
Yeah, we'll even take the bad listeners. We will take any listener that you force upon us. So that sounded wrong. So please tell your friends about us, because that really helps, and that can be like, you know, tell them face to face, or you could share stuff on share our episodes on social media. That we really appreciate it as well. In the meantime, you could also email us at queerspodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear your sort of comments and your questions and all of that kind of stuff, and we're going to try and take more of an effort to read these emails out on the end. At the end of the podcast, and to engage with them and to make that a regular part of the podcast.
That'd be great. We also, as we said at the start of the show, finally have social media, and you can and should like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. On both platforms, it's at Queers Podcast, which is pretty easy. We'll post the episodes there and links to things that we find interesting and that sort of stuff, so hopefully get some discussion going there. We also have our personal social media accounts. Simon is on Facebook at Simon Copland Writer. He's also on Twitter at Simon Copland. I am on Twitter at Ben C. Riley, so you can contact us there as well.
I'm really looking forward to engaging with all on our new social media platforms. I think it's going to be lots of fun. But in the meantime, we will see you all next time, and I'm looking forward to that, although I'm looking forward to my holiday a little bit more.
I'm very jealous. We will see you soon.